This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Treeland. If you're a smoker and you smoke contraband cigarettes, this year's World No Tobacco Day is of relevance to you. Themed Stopping the Illicit Trade of Tobacco Products, Dr. Zariha Mohammed Zain is here to explain how we can achieve that. Dr. Zariha has worked in public health for 20 years and was previously in charge of tobacco control and the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control in the Ministry of Health. I'll also be asking her what she thinks about the opposition to a proposed smoking ban in all eateries. Welcome to the show, Dr. Zariha.
Thank you very much.
How is the traffic on the road?
Oh, it's a nightmare. Terrible.
So we've been, as mentioned, the theme is stopping the illicit trade of tobacco products.
Yes.
How big is the trade of illicit tobacco in Malaysia and around the world?
Illicit trade is a big problem. It is always something that the industry use to counter sometimes any efforts to control tobacco. As far as Malaysia is concerned, it is claimed by the industry that Malaysia has got one of the highest prevalence of illicit trade of cigarette for tobacco, especially cigarettes. And they claim that it's about 30%. In other words, one of every ten is illicit cigarette, which may or may not be the real picture, because the studies was done by the industry, and they do have vested interest in proposing or make known such statistics.
What dangers does illegal tobacco pose?
If you're asking about the dangers as far as health is concerned, there is no difference in the cigarette itself. All cigarettes are very hazardous to health, whether it is legal or illegally traded.
A cigarette is a cigarette.
Yes, that's right. But illicit cigarette makes, generally, it makes the price of cigarette cheaper, because like in Malaysia, we have a floor price for how much a pack of cigarettes can be sold. But when it is illicit, the price are usually very, very low, and a lot lower than the floor price that is set. So it makes access much easier in terms of financial access to people who may not be financially able to get expensive cigarettes. So when that is the case, it makes the prevalence of smoking a lot higher, and hence the effects on health much higher.
Campaigns against smoking have been raging on, you know, for years now, and the number of people smoking has decreased, but profits at tobacco companies have never been higher. Mm-hmm. How do we explain this, you know, this seeming difference in what's going on?
Right. Actually, the numbers may or may not have come down for the very reason that the population is growing bigger. When we talk about the burden of smoking, we talk about prevalence. The prevalence have been shown to either be remaining static or maybe slightly reduced. But because the population, the base is bigger, the numbers, the absolute numbers are bigger. And when you look at the efforts that was done, the tobacco control efforts done in developed countries, in Australia, for example, they've got very strong laws and activities and so on. It has been shown to be coming down, both the prevalence as well as the number of smokers. So what, especially Malaysia's concern, what we need to do is to keep up to improve and increase further our efforts to control tobacco. Because it has been shown that the efforts that we take, they're all evidence-based. It has been shown to be very effective. So we should not stop. In fact, we should increase further the efforts.
Why hasn't smoking just been banned outright like other deadly recreational drugs?
Well, if you ban on something that is so widely addictive and prevalent, it will only cause the substance to be to go underground, it becomes even more difficult to control. So by legalizing and continue to legalize it, we can control it better, and we can actually, the government can gain income from that industry.
That gain of income comes in part from taxation. Is raising taxes effective as a policy to reduce smoking rates?
Yes, raising tobacco taxes is the most effective short-term strategy. It has been shown over and over in studies done worldwide and also done by the World Bank at the global level. It has been shown that with a 10% increase of tax and 10% increase of price of cigarettes, because when you increase tax, definitely the price of cigarettes would rise. A 10% increase would cause a reduction in demand of about 8% in developing countries or among the poorer people, and about 4% among the developed countries or, you know, the richer people.
Would that in turn have an impact on illicit tobacco trading, though? Because presumably, if people can't afford to buy their cigarettes because the taxes are too high, they'll just turn to other means.
That's right. There's always this discussion and argument that this discrepancies in taxation for tobacco in different countries will encourage and cause a higher level of smuggling across borders. That can be true generally, but it's not completely true. I mean, that's always an argument that the industry likes to put. And so if you increase the tax, they know that tax is the most effective means of controlling tobacco. It really reduces demand. They know that's very effective. They don't want it to happen. So their argument is over and over, it's the same thing. You increase tax, it will cause increase in smuggling. But that shouldn't be a reason for not increasing tax. Okay, what the government should do is to increase on their efforts to curb smuggling by having better enforcement and activities to cut down on the probabilities of smuggling. So it shouldn't be the argument for not increasing tax for tobacco.
Looking at how the government can make money from taxation on tobacco products, an estimated 100,000 Malaysians die every year from smoke-related illnesses, and this is according to ministry statistics. Is the source of income from taxation actually enough to offset the cost of healthcare from smoking-related diseases?
Well, what statistics that I've got is based on something that was done like many years ago. That was a 2005-2006 study on the healthcare costs of tobacco, and it only looked at three diseases. I mean, tobacco causes, you know, a battery of diseases, a lot of it. I mean, from the head to the toe, and for all groups of the population, from the very young, from infancy, from fetal stage right up to the elderly. So it's a lot than just the three diseases that were studied. And the three diseases that were studied was heart attack, lung disease, that is a chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and lung cancer. And just those three diseases, treatment and management of these diseases cost a lot more than the amount of money that we collected from the tobacco industry. It's about $3 billion. So it's a lot more. The cost is a lot more. It's a negative equation, actually. You don't gain anything at all. In fact, you get a lot of losses.
If you have any questions for Dr. Zariha on tobacco control or on World No Tobacco Day or even illicit trade of tobacco products, you can text us at 016-201-9000. You can also tweet at BFM Radio. Earlier, you said that taxation is a really effective way of reducing purchasing of tobacco.
Right.
But our policies on cigarette advertising, because that's something that happens, you know, that we've looked at a lot in this show, that has been looked at a lot across different countries. Are policies on this stringent enough in Malaysia?
Well, it's, as far as advertising ban is concerned, which is one of the most, which is one of the evidence-based effective strategies for controlling tobacco, we've done quite well, I would say, but there's a lot of room for improvement. Malaysia has banned completely in 2008 all forms of advertising, whether direct or indirect. When we had the law in 2004. Before, in 1994, what we had was just ban on direct advertising. That means you can't show people smoking or cigarettes or cigarette boxes. And then in 2004, when we had the amendment of the law, we banned completely direct and indirect. But display of packets, cigarette packets, like, for example, when you get to a provision shop, you would see a whole stack of cigarettes being displayed very colorfully behind the counter, where you pay up whatever goods that you've bought. Those are not considered as tobacco advertising when it clearly is, and it's really advertising cigarettes to children who buys things in these provision shops and pay up at these counters, and they look at the display boards. We call it power boards, and it's terrible. We need to get rid of that. That has got to go. So only then will our complete ban on advertising would be foolproof.
Even if we didn't get rid of the power boards, I mean, if the power boards were displaying nothing but plain white boxes, that would also go some way towards achieving that.
Yes.
Is there evidence then that plain packaging works? And how does it compare to what we've got right now, where we've got health warnings on our boxes?
Mm-hmm. Certainly, I mean, there are different grades of effectiveness. Rather than not having any health warnings at all, it's better to have text warning. Rather than text warning, it's better to have pictorial warnings. That's what we have. And rather than having 50% or 30% of pictorial warnings on a cigarette box, it's better to have bigger. So the bigger, the better. And rather than having pictorial warnings without plain packaging, it's better to have plain packaging and big pictures. Pictorial warnings. So it's greater. It goes up. The effectiveness goes up. So it has been shown scientifically that it is effective in that direction. I mean, the stringent, more restrictive the tobacco the tobacco companies allowed to use whatever space they have, the better it is for tobacco control. So and they know very well that it works. So that is why they were trying very hard, the tobacco industry is trying very hard to stop Australia and other countries who are trying to, who has made that step to have plain packaging for cigarettes.
What is the process for countries who are trying to emulate these packaging laws and who are trying to achieve either plain packaging or health warnings? Because if you look at cigarettes that you purchase in different countries, the boxes that you get are, you know, completely different. Yeah.
Yeah. What do they have to do? Of course, whatever they do, it's within their borders, the law that applies to their country. But at the global level, there is this Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, or the FCTC, that puts a minimum requirement for what countries should do. There is no ceiling for it. You know, you can go beyond. The sky is the limit on what you want to do in controlling tobacco. And as far as advertising ban and restrictions on packaging and labeling is concerned, Australia has led the way in the right direction. So countries, of course, being in the tobacco control community, like I was previously in the government, we do look at other countries and communicate and network with people, and because the approach of the tobacco industry is almost exactly the same for when they deal with the Australian government on issues, it would be the same. they deal the same thing, they approach the same way for the UK when UK wanted to do. So they would you know, take, you know, legal action and so on. So as for people in the authority who wants to set up policies and legislations for that, of course, you just need to change your law. You just need to change your law. In Malaysia, whenever there is a proposed law change, we would open it for input from the public and so on. Of course, the tobacco industry also gives their input. And usually they seem to be louder because they're more organized. But more and more now in Malaysia, the public is also voicing their concern and putting their foot down on certain issues.
Having said that, however, the Asia-Pacific region does represent the fastest-growing tobacco market in the world, with Indonesia, Pakistan and Vietnam, as well as Malaysia, being the top four countries reporting rapid increase in tobacco use. Why is Malaysia still a country with a relatively high rate of smoking?
Yeah, I mean, Malaysia also has got very high rates of migrants from these countries. So they do constitute in the prevalence of smoking in our country. I suppose the government just need to do a lot more than what they've done. Obviously, what they've done so far has made some impact, but it's not enough. The prevalence of smoking is coming down, actually. It's not really going up. But like I say, the numbers are bigger because the population is bigger. So it would then translate to the fact that the demand is going up. So there is an increase in demand, but the prevalence is actually coming down. So the government used to be very active and very committed in health education, public health education, like the Tatnak campaign, but now it's not heard anymore. So that the government should continue because it's very effective. No matter what people say, that it's not doing any good, but it is, because studies have shown that it's doing good. Those people who are saying that it's not doing good, they're just saying it without evidence. So the government must be aggressive in promoting healthy lifestyle and anti-tobacco campaigns and so on. Increase taxes, you know, increase the pictorial warnings. When we first put up the pictorial warnings, it shows a reduction in demand. So it's effective. But after a while, people get used to things. The government must change. I mean, increase the size. We would just change the pictures. You know, keep on making that difference.
Recently, a proposed ban on smoking at all eateries nationwide was met with a lot of opposition from industry groups. And I think that in some ways represents this push and pull, you know, when it comes to tobacco control in the country, because there's always that industrial commercial concern versus health and, you know, public wellness. So what do you make of the argument then that businesses would be affected should this ban be implemented?
That's not true. They've got no evidence, you know. They said the business will come down. Where is the proof? Because Singapore has banned smoking in eateries. Are they losing business? The same thing has happened in Malacca, and for smoke-free Malacca. They have banned smoking in even non-aircon, eating places. But are those shops being shut down? In fact, it's the contrary, because a lot more people are coming to Malacca for tourism. If you go there on weekends, you get a long queue and so on. Because now, eateries are more family-friendly. In the past, maybe parents don't want to bring their children to restaurants because they're very hazardous. The air is so polluted. But now they're bringing their children. So there are many positives. Of course, not to mention that we are protecting the rights of the non-smokers. Actually, these people who are making noise, they're a minority. They're very small, but they're very loud. So what needs to be done is for the majority to make louder noises, because they've got more rights. than these people. And the claim that it's gonna affect businesses is completely not true, because it has been shown locally. I've mentioned for Malacca, it has been shown in Singapore. It has been shown in any parts of the world where efforts of creating more smoke-free places is well on the way.
Another initiative that was taken up was that late last year, the ministry gazetted all rest and recreation stops along highways as non-smoking zones. The ban also covered sheltered walkways in the KL city centre area, which span a total of about 23 kilometres. Has this been effective?
Honestly, I won't be able to tell you for sure. I mean, we need to do an evaluation of the effectiveness. But generally, it's been welcomed by a lot of people, and something that is thought to be impossible, you cannot smoke in R&Rs, now becomes a reality. But whether people adhere to it, that's a different matter. But to get that first step of getting it done, we've passed that hurdle. So now it's about enforcement. So that question, perhaps the Ministry of Health would be the best people to answer. But I don't know of any evaluation being carried out. Anyway, it's quite recent that has been done, right?
So yes, fairly recent.
Time, yeah.
I'm speaking today with Dr. Zariha Mohamad Zain, board member of the Malaysian Women's Action for Tobacco Control and Health. We are discussing World No Tobacco Day, which has the theme Stopping the Illicit Trade of Tobacco Products. Up next, we find out a little bit more about why the tobacco industry remains so resilient, as well as what Dr. Zariha thinks of e-cigarettes after the market updates with Keith Kam. You are listening to Live and Learn on BFM 89.9. Hello, you are still listening to Live and Learn with me, Lee Chui Lin, and in the studio is Dr. Zariha Mohamad Zain, board member of the Malaysian Women's Action for Tobacco Control and Health, or MyWatch. We are discussing World No Tobacco Day and basically how we can stop people from smoking by means that are more effective. So, Dr. Zariha, you know, one area that's really come up in recent times has been e-cigarettes. It's an industry that continues to grow. What is your personal view of e-cigarettes?
I would say e-cigarette is not an alternative to smoking. It's not a good alternative at all. But certainly, if you compare cigarettes with e-cigarettes, it's much cleaner and hence it's... In terms of safety, it's safer than cigarettes. But I wouldn't advocate for it at all. I wouldn't say not at all, but not much. Because e-cigarette, there's so many things that we don't know about it. It's not without danger at all. There are poison in there, which may affect health, because you're actually inhaling it directly into the lungs, and it's not just it's not water. It's got a lot of solvent, propylene glycol, you know, all those things, and all these other additives that they put in. So those are dangerous to health. Why go through that? I suppose people say that if you're addicted to the cigarettes, this is a safer alternative. Maybe yes. They can, but they shouldn't go that road unless if they really try to quit, cold turkey and completely fail. What's more important about e-cigarette is that it is not regulated. That is the big problem, because then young people who never smoke a cigarette, they can try the e-cigarette. It's not regulated. You can buy it anywhere.
It's touted as less dangerous.
Yes. So that is very worrying. So it is something that the government will have to do something about. That product must be regulated.
World No Tobacco Day, as we've mentioned, the theme is stopping the illicit trade of tobacco products. How exactly do we go about doing that? And what role should our country play in stopping it at our borders?
Mm-hmm. Of course, illicit trade is not just a one country issue. It is, it crosses, it's trans, It crosses a lot of borders, and it hence cannot be the solution cannot be just a one country solution. Of course, a single country will have to do their best to make sure that the illicit products don't come into their shores. But for as far as tobacco is concerned, there is a protocol under the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, or FCTC. There is a protocol on illicit trade for tobacco. And it has been since, I think it was 2011 or 2012, and it is open for ratification by countries, but Malaysia has not ratified it yet. We didn't even sign it. The protocol require countries to do to commit even higher in their efforts to control illicit cigarettes coming into their shores, and hence there will be requirement for countries to invest on certain things like buying certain equipment and so on. Perhaps that was the reason why we're taking it a bit of time to ratify that. But what we need to do is to ratify it as soon as possible. It's going to be for our own good. Already the government is losing a lot of money from illicit cigarettes sales and the trading for illicit cigarettes. Being a part of the protocol would make our country, in a better position to control the issue, because the provisions within the protocol will allow countries to deal with the issues better. So I would encourage. No, it's not encourage. I would strongly urge the government to ratify the protocol for illicit tobacco trade under the FCTC.
Finally, you mentioned earlier on in the interview that when it comes to tobacco control, when it comes to tobacco control in individual countries, the sky's the limit in terms of what we're able to do. However, with the much talked about TPP, is there a danger then that Malaysia might suffer the fate that Uruguay, Australia and Thailand did in other trade deals, where they were dragged into expensive, years-long international legal fights over their rights to reduce tobacco use?
Certainly. Free trade agreements and free trade and investors agreement is a big threat to tobacco control. In fact, it's a huge threat for the FCTC implementation for all countries in the world who are parties to the FCTC. And the tobacco industry has over and over used their so-called privileges and rights to carry out their businesses as usual in countries where they seem to be protected by the free trade agreement. And the TPP is a huge worry for us. But Malaysia, we have to congratulate Malaysia for its boldness in putting up a proposal for a complete carve-out of tobacco from the TPP. But we are... it's still a big challenge because we need countries, the other TPP countries, to support and go along with Malaysia in its proposal for a total carve out, and we're still waiting, and we hope that we'll see the best out of this whole thing as it unfolds.
Thank you very much, Dr. Zariha. I've been speaking with Dr. Zariha Mohamed Zain, board member at the Malaysian Women's Action for Tobacco Control and Health, or MyWatch. She's been joining me in conjunction with World No Tobacco Day, themed Stopping the Illicit Trade of Tobacco Products. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.